So the number of bankruptcies caused by medical bills has actually gone up. In fact, between 2001 and 2007, that number rose by 50%. The vast majority of bankruptcy cases involve medical bills. And the current bankruptcy code doesn't let them distinguish between those that are caused by credit problems and those that are caused by medical bills. According to one study, 62% of people who file do so because of medical expenses. Joining us this morning is Carrie Burns. She's a social worker. Carrie was financially devastated after her late son was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. They went through a costly bankruptcy process as a result of medical debt. Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. You had medical insurance.
We did. We were sort of one of the lucky ones. We had insurance. The majority of my son's bills were covered, but the bills totaled about $5 million. He was in intensive care for 13 months before he passed away. So it's been really difficult. My husband and I took leaves of absence from work. We both worked full-time in order to be with our son, and that's a decision we certainly don't regret in any way. But in that time, when you don't work, not only did we have some medical bills, but everything else, you know, we couldn't pay anything. So we got into a situation where we were unable to get out, and we are still going through the bankruptcy process.
So most people, I think, would be surprised to hear that you can go bankrupt over medical bills when you're covered by insurance. You're saying it's the associated costs from this devastating illness.
Absolutely. You know, when I testified before a Senate Judiciary Committee on Tuesday, and one of the things that was talked about on the panel was that medical costs, you know, they may not be actual medical bills, but the debt that you get into just trying to live your day-to-day lives and trying to survive while you have someone in the hospital in intensive care certainly pile up. You know, day-to-day life doesn't stop, but if you stop working and you're also caring for someone who's critically ill, it can get really out of hand very quickly.
Okay, and one thing to really understand here is that the bankruptcy laws were reformed in 2005. Under the old bankruptcy law, it would have allowed you to keep your house. Under the reforms, you can't.
Right. As far as I know, the new legislation would increase the homestead exemption. We actually lost our house to foreclosure in August. So unfortunately for us, it's a little too late, but we're hoping that these new guidelines will help people in the future.
Okay, to get us some clarity here on this issue, Henry Summer is a supervising attorney at the Pro Bono Consumer Bankruptcy Assistance Project in Philadelphia. He's also editor-in-chief of Collier on Bankruptcy. And our own Todd Zwillick, their Washington, D.C. correspondent for The Takeaway, joins us as well to explain what's being considered in Washington to reform these bankruptcy laws. Henry, let's go to you first. We had a very publicized reform of bankruptcy laws in 2005. How did it change the law that hurt somebody like Carrie Burns?
Well, the so-called reform in 2005 was a bill that was heavily promoted by the financial services industry, by the creditors, and the, you know, the Republican Congress at the time. And what it did was made bankruptcy harder, more expensive, more difficult for everybody who files, all consumers who file, including people who have medical debts. And it is really also limited how much relief you can get in bankruptcy. You end up with more debts still coming out of bankruptcy than people had before. So it was a real step backwards. And that kind of story that Ms. Burns had, I mean, it's a terrible story that, unfortunately, bankruptcy lawyers hear pretty regularly.
You know, that she lost, not only did her son die, but she lost her home and everything.
Yeah, and one of the things, you know, that we see, which is unfortunate, is people are very reluctant to file bankruptcy. You know, it still carries a stigma. They will do almost anything to avoid it. So they will sometimes, you know, put a mortgage on their home and put their home at risk. They'll borrow from their 401ks and put their retirement at risk. And, you know, sometimes that could be avoided if they got to a bankruptcy lawyer earlier. You know, one of the problems is bankruptcy has this stigma, and people sometimes don't get to a lawyer early enough. So I'd really advise people with financial problems to see an early lawyer early, not necessarily to file bankruptcy, but to find out what the different options are.
Okay. Carrie, actually, as she was saying, testified in front of the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on Tuesday. Somebody else who testified at that meeting was Elizabeth Edwards.
Mm-hmm. Even moderate levels of out-of-pocket spending relative to family income created medical bill problems. I sit in a chemotherapy chair once every few weeks, and listened to people speaking with the person who accompanied them, wondering how they're going to pay for the kinds of care that they need in order to stay alive.
Todd Zwillick, you join us from Washington, and that the discussion, the reason those hearings are being held is because the Congress is looking at possibly changing bankruptcy laws yet again. What are they considering?
Well, this is all in the context, Celeste, of course, of health care reform,
right,
as you can imagine, because there's a big health care reform package moving, as we all know, even though it's moving a little bit slowly right now. There's a couple ways you can come at this, and the Congress is really looks like it's taking both ways. One is to change the bankruptcy laws to say we're going to differentiate between consumer debt, like you didn't pay your credit card or you bought that car that you couldn't afford or bought a house you couldn't afford or something and you're going bankrupt, versus medical debt, bankruptcy because of an unexpected or catastrophic illness, and change the threshold to get into bankruptcy if you have medical debt, so to make it easier for people like Carrie to protect their homes, protect their assets if they have medical debt. But there's another, perhaps more important way, that the health reform bill itself really speaks to this problem. There are a lot of provisions in this bill that are designed to really prevent people from breaking the bank if they confront, you know, in Carrie's case, $5 million costs for her son's illness. And they do it in a couple ways. One, you know, insurance companies right now say you are covered up to $1 million. And after that,
right,
you're on your own. Under this bill, they can't do that anymore. They can't set a limit on what the coverage is. If you're covered, you're covered to the extent of the illness. Also, as we've been saying over and over, this bill would also rule out denying you for pre-existing conditions and for rescission. And what that means is, you know, for a pre-existing condition, right now, a lot of people have insurance. They think they're covered. But if their illness is related to some pre-existing condition, they get sick, they go back to their policy, and the insurance company might say, sorry, we're not covering that. And if that's a million-dollar illness, again, it breaks the bank. And finally, it does one other really important thing. Most of the bills that are under consideration right now actually have dollar caps that you can be asked to spend if you're on the exchange, on the individual or small group market. And we don't know where that's going to land, but it's hovering somewhere around $5,000 to $6,000 for an individual or $10,000 to $12,000 for a family. Now, 12 grand for a lot of families is a lot of money.
It is.
But it's not $500,000 and it's not $1 million. So that's designed to prevent the bank from breaking.
Let's go back to Carrie Byrne, social worker. You are going through bankruptcy now because of your son's illness. What you just heard what Todd said was being changed in the healthcare reform. Would those changes have helped you?
They probably would have. I mean, our situation sort of was a little bit extreme. My son was in intensive care for 13 months.
Yeah.
But certainly having different options would be great. Not having to go through credit counseling would be wonderful. That's been an awful, terrible process for us. Just sort of humiliating and degrading. You
asking
know.
You why you let your credit get so bad.
Yeah,
right?
What else could you have done instead of going bankrupt?
Maybe had my son not get cystic fibrosis.
Yeah, maybe not.
Carrie
yeah.
Byrnes is a social worker. We also heard from Henry Summer, supervising attorney at the Pro Bono Consumer Bankruptcy Assistance Project in Philadelphia. There's a different story that's affecting you about health care, and that's the swine flu vaccine. And we are asking you, have you been able to get the vaccine, and have you wanted to? And if you're worried about the vaccine, why? We have an email from Carl at mytakeofthetakeaway.org. I very conveniently received the seasonal flu vaccine at work, but no word on the H1N1 vaccine. In the back of my mind is that it will morph into something terrible like the 1918 outbreak. Boy, I hope not. Let us know what you think at 877-8-MY-TAKE, mytakeofthetakeaway.org. I'm Celeste Headlee, and this is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.